Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
Amazon warehouse workers in Minnesota are planning to walk off the job Monday during Amazon's peak sales event. As NPR's Alina Selyuk reports, the employees want better working conditions.
William Stoltz is a picker at a warehouse in Shakopee outside Minneapolis. All day, he puts together Amazon orders by picking items off giant shelves brought to him by robots.
I'm constantly running back and forth, getting down on my knees, getting up on my ladder over and over again.
Amazon wants its pickers and packers to work at a particular pace. For example, picking one item every 8 seconds or so. Stoltz is one of the Shakopee workers who plan to strike to push Amazon to ease these productivity quotas.
Treat us like human beings, not like machines.
The workers also want Amazon to stop relying on temp workers. They plan to walk out for 6 hours during Amazon's biggest sales event, Prime Day. Stoltz expects about 100 workers to join the walkout. The facility employs about 1,500. Still, this will be one of the most high-profile labor actions at an Amazon warehouse in the U.S. Amazon says the allegations are baseless and that it already converts a lot of temps to full-time employees. The company touts its benefits and pay of more than $16 an hour. Stoltz says his friends have left the warehouse for lower-paying jobs to escape the physical demands. For Amazon, the fallout won't be financial, says Mark Wolfrat of the logistics firm MWPVL International.
I think the negative impact is more the publicity, the fear that it will snowball, cause other facilities to do the same thing.
So far, the only other Amazon workers to participate in Monday's protest are a few flying in from the corporate headquarters in Seattle. Two Minnesota lawmakers say they are watching the situation. Representative Ilhan Omar, a Democrat whose district borders Shakopee, says she stands with Amazon workers fighting for workplace fairness. Alina Selyuk, NPR News.
And a note, Amazon is an NPR sponsor.
Black brother, hell.
California is now the first state to ban discrimination against the natural hair texture of many black Americans. For years, braids, twists, locks, and afros were not welcome in workplaces and schools and often thought of as unprofessional. The new law, called the Crown Act, will go into effect next year. Midday Edition co-host Jade Heinemann spoke with State Senator Holly J. Mitchell, who introduced the Crown Act.
Senator Mitchell, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
So what inspired the Crown Act? And I should say that Crown is an acronym for Create a Respectful and Open Workplace for Natural Hair. So what inspired you to create this law?
Well, you know, there are a number of things. First of all, I've worn my own hair natural. I have locks for about 15 years now, was natural before that for about 5 years. There were a number of things. I was attending a policy conference convened by the National Black Caucus of State Legislators. And Senior VP with Dove was there talking to legislators about this concept that they've had in the beauty industry about really trying to change this law. And they were encouraging us to consider introducing resolutions in our various state houses across the country. Literally, just a few weeks after that experience last December, I, along with many Americans, saw the horrible video of the young high school wrestler in New Jersey who the referee determined that his locks were not appropriate for wrestling, didn't fit their rules and regulations, and we all witnessed him having his hair viciously cut off right there on the mat in front of all of his teammates, etc. And that those two experiences came together. We thought about what we could do here in the state of California and decided that we would amend the Fair Employment and Housing Act and Education Code to make sure that the definition of race is inclusive of traits historically associated with race. That would include hair texture and what we're calling protective hairstyles. As you stated, locks, braids, and twists. That's how the Crown Act was born.
And this legislation has had a lot of support. Why do you think it struck such a deep personal chord with people?
I think it's a deep personal issue with many people. I have been blown away by the numbers of letters and calls that I've received from parents, not only in California but across the country, whose daughters largely have either been reprimanded, sent home, or even suspended because school officials deemed that their hair was a distraction to others or unruly. And the number of California residents who've reached out through social media and direct contact with my office to tell us horror stories about employers who either through kind of implicit or explicit bias suggested to them that their natural hair lacked professionalism. And so it's really spurred this conversation about what constitutes professionalism in the workplace and what standard by which are we measured. And this notion that, you know, a Eurocentric standard of straight hair should be perceived as the norm and as professional. And through this bill and through our life experiences, we're challenging that.
And this discrimination doesn't just affect the way someone's hair looks in the workplace or school. And for many people, this impacts their overall well-being. Can you talk to me about that?
Yeah, there are many people who've talked about really the health impacts of chemically straightening your hair. My chief of staff, for example, and many women have talked about when they were pregnant, how their doctors and cosmetologists have strongly suggested that they not use chemical relaxer to perm or straighten their hair. Because it basically, most of those relaxers contain lye. It is a chemical that alters the core structure of your hair and the texture of your hair. And so there are health ramifications, but fundamentally the bill is about personal choice, that I should not be penalized because I don't choose to straighten my hair. As when I first ran for office in 2010, I was clear that, you know, the electorate would make their decision about voting for me based on what was inside my head, not how I choose to wear my hair. And I think that applies to workplaces across the board.
And so have you had your own experiences with discrimination based on how you wear your hair?
You know, I have to say that I'm fortunate. I say I don't think I have. When I decided to lock 15 years ago, I was the CEO of an organization, and I was conscious of the fact that I was making both a political and social statement by choosing to wear my hair natural and lock it. And I was, you know, very mindful, and that was an intentional act for me. I think when I decided to run for office, it then became, you know, a part of a broader strategic conversation around electability. And that's when I chose to challenge that notion. And again, have not experienced the fact that voters or people elect me at least have not overtly expressed their opinion about it. Again, I was elected that first time in 2010 and have been reelected every election since.
On the surface, you know, this law appears to just enable everyone to wear their hair in its natural state, but it's bigger than that. In what ways does this legislation redefine what racial discrimination is?
I think, you know, hair, particularly for the African-American community, has really been political. If you think about the symbol of the Black Power movement in the 60s and big afros, and the natural hair is indeed a movement. It's a trend that's been going on for a good number of years, and you see more and more people with natural hair. You know, when the women filed suit and unfortunately lost in the U.S. Supreme Court in the early 80s, women who were in the banking industry and the airline industry, you know, we didn't have kind of critical numbers. All you have to do is look at the new marketplace for natural hair products to know that, you know, supply certainly meets demand. And so there is a growing movement, and there are, you know, significant numbers every day of people choosing to lock, twist, or braid their hair. And so this will inevitably be a culture shift. You know, for me, it is a reflection of my sense of pride and clarity and confidence in who I am as a black woman. That's what I think made that video of the young wrestler so deeply offensive, because no one cared to ask him why he locked his hair and what that represented to him. They simply cut his hair.
And now that the Crown Act is state law here in California, do you have a sense of if this legislation will be created in other states or even on a federal level?
We've already heard from colleagues, legislative colleagues in New York and New Jersey. I understood today that there is interest in Congress to introduce a similar piece of legislation. My colleagues in other state houses have called us to actually ask that we share our language with them. And so we believe this is just the beginning of the end to hair discrimination, another kind of chink in the armor ending racial discrimination in this country, and I'm just proud to be a part of that movement.
That was California State Senator Holly J. Mitchell speaking to Midday Edition co-host Jade Heinemann.
Context of white supremacy. Gusty Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Friday, July 12, 2019. So I have been told chink in the armor. I don't think that's in the word guide, but I do know in certain contexts that has been one of those interesting metaphors with potential racial context. They have called a certain group of non-white people chinks at times. So that's another metaphor I would recommend maybe not using. Anyway, Neutralizing Workplace Racism, our weekly platform. This broadcast is specifically designed, first and foremost, to encourage non-white people to seriously discuss and formulate counter-racist strategies on how to solve some of our problems in the workplace, whatever our workplace happens to be. I feel like this is a core component of the terrorism that non-white people around the globe face on a daily basis, and just encouraging folks to share some of their experiences, techniques. If you figured out some things that work well to solve some of your problems, you don't have issues with folks saying that your hair is unprofessional. You don't have folks like the Amazon situation. Folks, they are not plotting that they're going to have to strike to improve work conditions. That is not you. You are well taken care of. You get your bonuses, raises, promotions when they are available. You get sparkling performance reviews every time. If you need a day off, if you need a vacation, any of that, no problem. Your schedule is not changed willy-nilly. You're coming in at 9 a.m. one day and coming in at 11 p.m. the next day. None of that for you. Please help us grasp how you did it. Maybe we can emulate some of the ease, relative ease that you have in your workplace. We always encourage folks, if you're having problems, dial in. We'll try our best to come up with some counter-racist suggestions to help solve problems without creating new problems. The number again, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Number again, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. A few things before we get to folks that dialed in. If you have concerns about your voice being recognized, you want to maintain your anonymity, always you can drop us an email, untiljustice@gmail.com. Untiljustice@gmail.com. If you have either your own situation that you want to share, or if you have suggestions on what has been discussed on the broadcast, we can read your commentary anonymously. If you would like to participate that way, email again, untiljustice@gmail.com. I do want to make sure I also get on the record, since I've talked about being right here in Seattle for the duration of the time that we have broadcasted. I have said repeatedly, Seattle, greatest plantation in this hemisphere. No contest, at least out of the places that I've been to. I never say Seattle has the best weather. That is not on my list of why Seattle is so grand. This summer, if you can call it that, wow, I think today might be the first time that it's been above 70 degrees. I think it might have been above 70 on Monday. It may have been 72 degrees for a couple of hours before it got cloudy again. But wow, it has been the coldest summer in some time. Like, I can think of more days, the whole date, I can think of more days where the temperature at some point in the day or evening has been below 60 degrees than I can of days where it has been above 8. Actually, I can even I can think of more days where it's been in the 50s than it has been even above 75. I think that's accurate. It has been the coldest summer ever. No need for AC. Contemplating turning the heat on from time to time. Woo, still the best plantation ever. It is, however, warm today, and I can't even get out to enjoy the sun. We are here to discuss workplace racism. That is why this problem needs to be solved ASAP. That said, just quickly, the segment about Amazon, I played that because of hearing from folks on this here broadcast. We've had a number of folks who have or do work at Amazon, and they have talked about how toxic the environment is, not getting breaks, it being unsafe, having had to work really, really fast in the environment because they have all of these quotas and efficiency standards for what the productivity is supposed to be for their workers. We've had a number of folks who talked about that. I thought of that directly. And I guess that's something to think about with Amazon Prime coming up. These are the conditions of racism, white supremacy. I think that's next week or sometime soon. That second segment about the Crown Act, the legislation that Governor Newsom, suspected racist, passed last week in California. I played that. We talked about it last week. That was when they had the big photo op and Governor Newsom came out to do the signing, and he was flanked by all these black females, victims of racism. But the main component that I said last week, and they talked for about 6 minutes in that segment, I did not hear one sentence about enforcement. That's the most important part. Not, you know, they think that my locks are unprofessional, or they had, you know, they forced that young black male to cut his hair on the wrestling team. Remember that one? There's tons of those incidents. You know, we could go back, you know, as long as we want. That's not the point. Who is going to do the enforcement? They could have spent a good 6 or 60 minutes talking about the enforcement. Now, what is this going to look like? What agency is going to do the enforcing to make sure that this, you know, doesn't happen? I mean, there's still tons of reports that come into the EEOC about people being called nigger in the workplace and racist jokes and things of that nature. It seems that that is not supposed to be happening either. Pause. Remember that. That's not supposed to be happening either, but it still does. So who's supposed to do the enforcement of this to make sure that it doesn't happen? I haven't heard anything about that. I feel like that's the most important component. And I guess I would encourage listeners, that's the thing that we want to make sure does not get lost in discussions of racism, white supremacy. The doing part, the action part. Racism is bad. Okay, what should be done about this? A white person gets caught practicing racism. Oh, you're sorry. What should be done about this? That's the most important thing, because frequently that'll be one of the major ways that white people practice racism, white supremacy. They might even come out and talk against racism, but they don't have anything in place to enforce to make sure that this policy has some what they call bite to it. We're not just up here wasting time with buckets of words and photo ops. Now, speaking of racist jokes, nigger being used in the workplace, I was preparing for the broadcast today, found a news report. It's from HRDive.com, all about human resources, workplace issues. Maybe folks who have an interest in this sort of thing might be a site that you want to check out. But the report reads, this is published yesterday, Ninth Circuit Court, severely offensive, and they have that in quotes, severely offensive. I would not use that term. All of that, put that in the same category. Complaint, grievance, gripe, remarks, all of that. That is, you know, not the best way to articulate what happens. You, if anything, you can just say, I want to make a report of, you know, that this happened. There was a violation of policy and procedure. You can just say it that way. That is much better, much more accurate than severely offensive. Again, that presents it as just, you know, my feelings were hurt. You said something mean and hurt my feelings. I'm offended. That's not the way we want to present. That's not what we want to articulate when there's been a violation of policy and procedure, maybe even constitutional law. So this report reads, racial slurs created hostile work environment. The Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals has overturned a lower court's ruling that the use of four racial slurs on a worker's presence over 1 year was not enough to find that the worker was subjected to an abusive work environment. Johnny Mack worked in a town roads department for 20 years. In 2015, he got a new boss and a new co-worker. Mack was the only African-American employee. He said he heard the new boss and the new co-worker use the word nigger, they have N-word, three times, and a racial slur aimed at Native Americans one time. I wish they had written that out. Just add that to the data bank. In addition, a co-worker hit a snake in Mack's service vehicle. I'll read that again. In addition, a co-worker hid a snake in Mack's service vehicle, which Mack said caused him to have a heart attack. Mack sued, alleging harassment and retaliation in violation of Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, as well as intentional infliction of emotional distress, IIED. The trial court granted summary judgment to the employer, but the Ninth Circuit Court reversed. The use of four racial slurs made in Mack's presence between 2015 and 2016 was sufficient to establish a genuine issue of material fact as to whether Mack was faced with working in an abusive workplace. The Ninth Circuit Court said. The Ninth Circuit Court also quoted two of its previous decisions in 2004 and 2001 that nigger was highly offensive and demeaning, and perhaps the most offensive and inflammatory racial slur in English. The court also allowed Mack's intentional infliction of emotional distress claim to proceed because Mack's co-worker knew Mack was extremely afraid, they have that in quote, of snakes, and suffered from poor health. I'll give a little bit more detail. A plaintiff is not required to prove a hellish workplace to establish a hostile work environment. The Seventh Circuit has previously ruled earlier this year. It allowed a case to proceed that involved three racial slurs by a supervisor over a six-month period, stating that the supervisor's conduct was both severe and humiliating. He goes on to give more details. Again, things like this happen on a regular basis. I don't know what sort of enforcement they have in place to keep this from happening either. Whatever it is, it doesn't seem to be too effective because Mack is not the only one. I read this just because I got to the part about the snake and wow, if anybody has any experience with that, with an animal being slipped in your vehicle in the workplace, please, that is mandatory. You are not allowed to spectate if you have any personal work experience with a reptile, serpent, being stuffed into your vehicle or any other critter being stuffed into your vehicle. I can even pause here. This is in the office. I've talked about that. It was first mentioned on this program by a suspected racist. I have his book in my library right here because of racist jokes, them telling it's all about a workplace environment. And they tell all kinds of racist jokes, almost a racist joke explicitly in every program or so. But they have a specific episode where they are mistreating a new employee, happens to be a white woman. They're mistreating a new employee. And they put a raccoon or some kind of wild animal. They had sneak it in her vehicle, unbeknownst to her. But yeah, these sort of pranks, they call them, in the workplace. And I thought especially that they knew this black male was afraid of snakes and was in poor health. And, oh, that'll be a good one. We'll get him. Apparently, this might have been retaliation after he'd already reported them. We'll put a snake in the vehicle. Why isn't that a criminal offense? To put it, I don't know if it was poisonous or, you know, what type of snake we're talking about. But, I mean, even if it was a kitten, you know, that's not mine. Like, what are we talking about here? Is that breaking and entering? You break into somebody's vehicle? I don't know if the door was locked or what have you. Put a snake in and sit back, gets a heart attack, and then, oh, that's funny. You see what we did to Mac? Slipped that old snake in there, and he passed out. That was a good one. Wow. Again, there seemed to be a lot of this because we've also had a lot of listeners who have talked about these types of pranks, coworkers sneaking up on you from behind and trying to scare you, trying to frighten you in the workplace. I would bring all that up as safety issues. You don't have to cite this report, although I do think this is an important one. I bookmarked it myself, but I would bring that up as a safety issue. Are we here to try to frighten somebody? We don't know who might have a heart condition and put all that stress on them unduly. Is that the professional way to conduct ourselves in the workplace? Is that what we're supposed to be doing? Is this a sorority house, a fraternity house? We're looking to put pranks on one another. I can slip a whoopee cushion under your seat or maybe have something to fall on top of your head. Is that what we're going for? Is that what this is? Are we still in elementary school? These are questions. Anyway, again, if any folks have experience, a critter of some sort being stuffed in your vehicle or in your desk in your workplace, maybe you come in and open up and bang, you got a skunk stuffed in the drawer. Please share. You cannot be a spectator if you have direct experience with that one. I will try to get in a few of the folks who wrote commentary. If you did write in commentary, untiljustice@gmail.com. Again, we can read your comments anonymously if you would like to contribute that way. See, first person who wrote in. Okay. So after becoming a dislocated worker due to my plant being shut down a year or so ago, I took advantage of the compensatory schooling that was offered, and after much thought, consideration, and suggestions from the Cows listeners, I decided going into the trades was a good option. I have now completed said schooling and entered my chosen field. For the sake of anonymity, I will not state the trade. I would like to report my workplace observations. First, I would like to point out that my white manager practiced deceit, which I believe was to keep me from coins. Through school, we learned that the general goal in the trades is to become licensed and to get certifications, which is done by obtaining an apprenticeship, then progressing to journeyman, and then with diligence to master. During my interview, when asked what my goals were, I made it very clear my goals were to get an apprenticeship and one day my journeyman, to which he replied, "You don't really need those. They just make you feel better about yourself," to which I replied, interesting. After a few weeks, it was common gossip that said manager was known as a, in quotes, bullshitter and fast talker. During my training period, I am required to ride along with and train under suspected white supremacists. My first observation upon visiting the plantation was that I was the only Negro there, and all of my co-workers' expressions and reactions only confirmed my suspicion as I walked through the shop to the office. Literally everyone stopped working. Some couldn't hide the surprised look on their faces, others putting on that awkward smile and facade. Note, I am not the only white person on the plantation. I am not the only non-white person on the plantation. There are three so-called Arab-speaking Egyptians here. To me, they are visibly, quote-unquote, mulatto, but do not identify as black or African. Only they are from Egypt, the Middle East, I guess. The first Egyptian has been with the company the longest and earned his place, but through nepotism got the other two in. One being someone whom he said he met at a gas station, and the other being his little brother, who is new to the country and much, much darker than the other two. It does not seem the other's skin tones are from a lack of sunlight bleaching, I suspect. That is billion-dollar enterprise worldwide. Riding with suspected racist white male number one. My job entails very long distances between job sites, maybe 3 to 6, depending on the day, warranting a lot of time for small talk. He starts the conversation by asking me where I'm from, what I listen to, the etc. Every time I got into a vehicle with one of them, it was always hardcore hip hop playing. Incidentally, we've talked about this before. Frequently, when it's this type of music, because they'll be saying nigger a lot of times and profanity, I would address that as being professional, that I don't think this is professional. And or if it's casual, you can just ask if we could listen to something different, that I don't particularly care for this sort of music, especially while we're in the workplace. But that's the that's what I would suggest, because I've seen where a lot of times whites who listen to this sort of music in the workplace, they'll even point to this and say, after they've said something tacky and racist, maybe they call you a nigger, or they've said nigger or said something racist. And it's, oh, I thought, you know, we just messed around. You know, we listen to the music all the time and it's no big deal. Like, yeah, what's the big deal? So, yeah, my suggestion would be not just to not listen to this sort of content in the workplace, but if white people are playing it, to request that that gets stopped. Continuing. Hardcore hip hop. Okay. Proceeds to tell me he can tell I'm cool, then tells me all about the violent activities he's engaged in, beating people up, joining gangs, and how he's from the projects and knows black people. That's in quotes. I keep my codified composure, not showing emotion, practicing a stoic nature, thinking this sure is strange to tell someone he just met. Your voice popped into my head. How can I relate to the Negro? The tackiness, I do say that. Riding with suspected racist white male number 2. Again, I get into his vehicle, hardcore gangster rap playing. Mind you, this is not through conventional means. They have to buy an adapter that allows them to use a radio station to play their music, showing the dedication, in my opinion. The usual small talk ensues. This guy, who is younger than me, constantly calls me boy with a country-sounding accent. Again, I keep my composure, not wanting to ruin my probation and knowing this is temporary. This guy hinted that I was hired for the purpose of racial showcasing. Riding with Egyptian number 2. This time, no tacky radio for the most part. I have to drive myself to the site sometimes, 1 hour to a hour and a half, in which I used to listen to the cows, but upon being around him, his attitude was the worst and seemed intent on making me work more than necessary while he relaxed, smoking cigarettes, never using courtesy, please, and thanks, but a go do this and go do that. I quickly got tired of that and decided if I'm going to fetch things, I'm going to take my time doing it. Excuse me. After a while, he begins to tell me how he has had black friends who steal and do drugs, some who he doesn't associate with. And the one time he didn't go out with his black friends, he shot someone. Again, how can I relate to the Negro? He almost hints that the person who hired me did so with the intent of racial showcasing and informed me in this strange way, you are the only black person, in quotes, to which I replied, well, yeah, I noticed, other than you. And he lists all the Egyptians. Everyone in the company is white, to which he stopped with this puzzled look and gave a half-hearted, almost disappointed, yeah. Riding with Egyptian number 1. So as my probation comes to an end, I have to ride with the supervisor so he can go over my work and check my progress. He made no transgressions or microaggressions against me. I do not encourage the use of that word, microaggressions. But the funniest thing happened that I'm taking as a sign from the universe. We pull up to this one house. I grab my tools and head to the door. An elderly black woman opens the door and is very surprised to have a colored person servicing them. I believe they were being codified because of my supervisor. The mom very bluntly says, all we've ever had is Caucasians and we've been getting service since the 80s. The son seemed very irritated with his mother and began trying to silence, hush up, ma, then rambled something about Trump. While this exchange was happening, I was having a good audible chuckle while my supervisor laughed uncomfortably, so I proceeded to do my work in the attic. My supervisor left for a moment and the son followed me up for a conversation. I informed him I'm the only one in the company. He proceeds to tell me it's not easy being black and speaking about historical oppression in the area and his journey. Then my supervisor returns and I was laughing to myself. He asked, what's so funny? I told him their surprise that I was black was funny, to which he bluntly confirmed that was why I was hired. Surprise, surprise. After he left, I eavesdropped on his conversation with the customer, which was something like, "Look at my skin. I'm from Africa, but I'm not black or white. I am me. I don't see color." This made my day. That's all for the observations so far. Side note, I would like to confirm that trades are good career paths. Lots of opportunities coming up in certain areas, and a lot of senior workers are now leaving the fields, and this is known information to whites. Even in trade school, most of the students had connections, but those experiences are another story. I'm not sure the white to non-white ratio on other plantations mirrors mine. An unbelievable level of nepotism is being practiced. Almost everyone knows someone's aunt, uncle, mom, dad, and family friends all on my plantation alone. That is standard operating procedure in the system of white supremacy. The system of white supremacy is nepotism by definition, just because there are less than 10% of the global population is classified as white. Therefore, just by them being such a small population of the planet, we talked about this before, it requires a lot of inbreeding. So the entire system of white supremacy is about nepotism. Continuing, I've even heard some people feeling burdened with the positions given to them through nepotism. I hope this helps someone. Much obliged for sharing. Just again, being observant in the workplace. I think it's so important. This victim of racism talking about keeping his composure at different times, whether it's the trashy music in the vehicle, them calling him boy, the disrespectful manner that, you know, they were talking to him, go grab this, go fetch that, that sort of thing. Keeping your composure. You can go about, you know, if you want to address any of those, if you want to ask questions, that sort of thing, that's great. But keeping your composure, especially in that environment where it's flagrant, you know, they're telling you that we don't even hire niggers. We just did this for some racial showcasing to make it seem like we are not practicing racism, to make it seem like we are only looking out for other white cousins and white nieces and white nephews and white aunts and my white little brothers and little sisters. No, no, that's not what we're doing. See, we got this nigger here. We got those other fellas over there, those dark ones right there. See, see, got the Egyptians too. See, we're not practicing racism. Composure, and I would be super observant, super codified. And I think the surveillance component, I think Emmy talked about that last week. We've talked about that for a long time. I don't think any of us realizes how much whites pay attention to, surveil, and watch us, workplace and otherwise. This victim talked about walking through the premises and feeling as though all eyes were on him and people's whole faces changed. They're not doing their work anymore. Like, oh my goodness, we've got this Nick Ray. Is he related to someone? Where did he come from? Whether you see that, whether you see it visually or not, that is taking place. Be mindful of that. That is the system of racism, white supremacy, where just non-white people, black people especially, you are going to be watched. We'll get in one more, and then we'll hit our callers. Let's see. So this is hyphenated. It says school work. I've said consistently school and workplace is about the same. So, you know, you'll need your counter racist code even if you are at school, especially all of the anything after high school. That's pretty much a job. So, yeah, same thing. Victim of racism, non-white female. She says nursing school orientation. Class of 25 students, two white females, about five, quote unquote, Hispanic females, one Hispanic male, four black females, 13 Asians. White female, head director, head of the nursing department. I thought, never mind. She described the program to us and her expectations, then went on a 20-minute rant about birth control. She asked if we knew the difference between the types of brands. One black female student in a tragic arrangement, cowbell, knew all the different types, and she quickly rattled them off to the director. The director even bought a few to show the class. She suggested we make an appointment with health services to discuss our options. Then the director talked about how she didn't want anyone getting pregnant during the program. I am so confused. I thought she was just talking about this in the general medical context. This is Woo, all right, continuing. So she talked about how she didn't want anyone getting pregnant during the program. She said she would be waiting till we were finished school. She said we should be waiting till we are finished school. A year later, I was talking to a new nursing student. She told me one of her classmates was pregnant. I was a little surprised and said, wow, she got pregnant after the director's birth control rant. She seemed so confused. I said, when you had orientation, did the director talk to your class about birth control? She said no. Birth control was never mentioned. The new class only had two black females. One was in her 30s and the other in her 50s. Wow, that is so important. The context of the Coon Man. I have talked about that all year long. When people talk about what they call health disparities, the book, we had him on the program. He's at the University of Texas, Austin. He wrote the book, Darwin's Athletes. Dr. Hobrick, he's been a guest on the program a couple times at least. But he has another book. He has Darwin's Athletes, but he has a different book that's Black and Blue that talks about the health industry. And he says exactly what I just said, that they always talk about these quote unquote health disparities. Black people don't get the same type of treatment as white people do. But the conclusion is never, well, maybe the white people in the health industry are racist. And he just goes and he looks at their voting patterns and, you know, that sort of thing and say, well, maybe that's a part of the contributing factor. Maybe they're racist. This would be a blatant one, and this would be one where not only do I remind listeners of the Coon Man, Governor Northam in Virginia, I would remind folks of eugenics, that that is the medical, that was mainstream medicine, early 20th century and beyond, eugenics. Let's devote our forces, our full resources to stopping non-white people and increasingly black people, to making sure that they are not having lots of children. We talked about that in Medical Apartheid, top five book. We talked about that repeatedly, in fact, over the years on the program. But I mean, this is stunning. And this, again, there's so many great illustrations just from what people have shared. Just being observant, talking to other people about their experience, where you can see differences between the orientations. Why are we getting this lecture about not getting pregnant and the uses of contraception and all this? Is this standard operating procedure when you know, are giving folks their introductory, their opening, I guess, to this nursing program? Is that standard? And then you find out, no, that doesn't happen. You have a class where you do not have very many non-white people. You don't have very many black females, and then most of them are, or she said it was only two, and one of them was in her 50s. That's generally not considered childbearing age. Oh, we don't need to have all these. If it's white women, oh, have as many little white children as you can. We will work with you in the program. That is astronomical. And even think about that. If someone had been in that class, let's say they are pregnant, but they're in the early stages, and you get all that stern rebuke at the beginning of the program, that could totally, you know, wreck and cause you a lot of unnecessary stress in terms of your progress, your productivity in the program. What if you're in that and then you find out within, you know, the next week or so, oh, wow, I got pregnant. I was pregnant before that and didn't even know it. Same thing. Thank you so much for sharing medical apartheid in so many ways. That is the type of thing, again, that you only get. That's why I encourage folks, try to get as much information as you can. That's, you know, one of our main tasks, I think, just being curious about lots of things. Try to learn. That's what Mr. Fuller says. Try to learn as much as you can about many, many things, everything. Learn a little bit about everything. All of it will funnel back into you being more informed about racism, white supremacy, and especially in the workplace. This is school, but same thing. Learn as much as you can. Talk to other employees. Talk to other students about their experiences. If they've had the same teacher or whatever their work experience is, you can learn a lot. Sometimes it'll just be interesting, important information that goes into your journal, and you are a little bit more informed about your environment. Number again is 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. I'll get to the other comments that folks wrote in as we proceed. My question, if folks have thoughts they would like to share, do we have suggestions if you're attempting to share counter-racist information, potential strategies with another Black person in the workplace? Do folks have any suggestions on ways that you think are most effective in going about doing that without creating more problems? Sharing constructive information, maybe counter-racist concepts with other Black people. Thought that was important. They were talking about different class action lawsuits. I think last week we talked about that. If you're going to do that, or even sometimes something smaller but constructive in the workplace, that might be a strategy that might be helpful at some point. So just seeing if folks have any strategies, talking to other Black people about potential counter-racist concepts or suggestions, things to do in the workplace to help solve a problem. Do people have any ideas on how that can be done in the most constructive manner without causing other problems, without them getting upset and that sort of thing? If you have any tips on that, that would be grand. The number again, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Folks who dialed in, if you have your own situation, if you have comments, suggestions on what's been shared, certainly if we have any folks who live in the California area, if you know any information about the Crown Act and the enforcement, definitely let us know. I'm always eager if we get more information on that. Folks who dialed in with a hand up, if you have comments, questions to share, line should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, retired firefighter.
Greetings, Gus. Greetings, everyone. To your question, I would think the first thing that it would be paramount is that you have a willing participant. Sometimes non-white victims of racism and white supremacy who are more aware of the global system of racism makes the mistake of sharing information with a person who doesn't want to hear it or has not really showed any indication that they would be inviting that specific type of advice. I've actually, you know, seen instances of that, it just takes your observation to be able to, and for the most part, even at the initiative start, and I remember Mr. Fuller stating years ago, is that you really don't even have to use the term race or racism. Just refer to things that are credited with achieving justice. And primarily, those terms are easily applied, in conversation on the job itself. And, as the relationship grows, then one can be more and more direct on the global system of racist white supremacy in the people activity of labor. But I would first, keep it in the lane of just talking about things that would equal justice. That's it.
Much obliged, retired firefighter. I think that the first portion of your response really important. Is this person even interested in addressing this matter? Does this person even think that this is a problem that they're having to deal with in the workplace? Because maybe you're the only one who thinks this is a problem. Even if it is a problem for all the other non-white people, if that person says, hey, it's not a problem for me, you know, they're not paying us correctly or whatever the issue is, not a problem for me. Always a great one to be mindful of. And then, as you said, also, you don't necessarily even have to use the term racism. It can all just be about problem solving, justice, corrective action. All of those shouldn't be a problem with any of those words. You should get a totally different response using those types of terms, that language, as opposed to white supremacy racism in the workplace. But yeah, are they receptive to dealing with this? And I would address that as you are going throughout the process, because that might change. It might start off that they are receptive and they do want to talk about this, and this is great. We're exchanging ideas and coming out with possible solutions to this. That might change. That shouldn't be a surprise either. Racists can find a variety of ways of pressuring non-white people to make it so that they are no longer comfortable in engaging in this activity. So that's, should be factored in. Not too much of a surprise about that either. But great suggestions. Retired firefighter. Other folks, if you have thoughts, comments you would like to share, *61.
Can I be heard again while people are organizing themselves?
Yes, sir. Retired firefighter.
Yes. I've mentioned, before on how myself and Mr. Clark and another black male met. So that was pretty easy on how we kind of like stayed in contact with one another still today. And it's, I mean, that's been over 30 years. But at the same time, we formed a quote unquote organization, and we would put on events and do certain things, and a coworker, a non-white black coworker, would show up, you know, to the event or the activity. And so that becomes, you know, easy as far as scouting, you know, a person, because they would show up to the event itself, you know. And so that tells you that that person basically is kind of like following the dots of figuring out that I need to be saying and doing something in the lines of countering racism, or should have some sort of concerns of it. And that would make it pretty easy to have a relationship with. And a lot of these people, I can call them up right after at the end of this program. And I haven't either seen or heard from them in years, primarily because of that. So, those are just some of the experiences that I had on that subject. Thank you.
Dig it. I know you talked about that repeatedly in some of the constructive activities that you all were engaged in over the years at the fire department down in South Florida. Before we check in some of the other folks who dialed in, I did want to make sure I also shared as well. This week I had talked about doing yoga in the park, being hired, and I think it's a 6-week program that myself and two other non-white yoga instructors here in Seattle were hired to come out and teach yoga Mondays for like 3 hours or so at the park. This past Monday was the first week I was teaching. Was grand. I knew we had already been to the park and already met the volunteers, folks that we were going to be working with at the park. Of course, they were white. But I had asked a lot of questions. Are there going to be opportunities for them to be disruptive or to practice racism or make this something less pleasant than it could be? Because the core about this was supposed to be teaching racism to other black people. We're at a park that is closer to an area of the city where a higher number of black people reside and hang out. And so the time that we went to visit, there were a number of black people at the park. And then this week when I went to actually teach, there were a substantial number of black children and black people there. But again, just asking questions in advance to cut down on there being surprises. There were none. The weather was great. We were able to go out and teach. We had black children who came and taught. There was a black father there with his son. I guess his son plays football. Unfortunately, all that brain damage. But he plays football and I think some other sports. And he said, "Oh, yeah, I want my son to come and do some yoga. Can he come practice with you? So bring him on. Let's do it." He was so happy. There was a black mom who was there. She had her 8-year-old. He was, I think, the first class that we taught. And she came up. She was so happy. And I like to just have yoga accessible and a black instructor that's teaching. It's like, man, this is the whole reason to do the teacher training in the first place. It was grand. We should have some other opportunities this summer and even opportunities to promote other non-white instructors. I guess that would be one thing I would encourage. If you are self-employed, black entrepreneur, non-white entrepreneur, or even if you are directly employed, for whites to try as much as you can to promote other non-white people that you think do quality work. If it's promoting other non-white coworkers or even complimenting other non-white people who do quality work, I think that is extraordinary counter-racism and black self-respect. If you can compliment, suggest, promote other non-white people, man, enormous, and there can even be some counter-racism in that. I found if you can, help promote what other people are doing, sometimes they might be a little bit more receptive to hearing what you have to say about racism or something else constructive. Anywho, I will make sure to update as the teaching continues, if, anything happens. I thought about wearing my "please treat me like I am a white person" shirt, because that is my standard yoga shirt, at least when I, I'm going out to practice publicly. Although I had said I was not going to, that was a shirt that I would not wear to teach. I'd said that before, Jen, if you're teaching, you're supposed to be non-political, just kind of neutral, just there to hold space. So I said I would not wear it. However, I am reconsidering, and perhaps I'll wear it the last day that we teach. Maybe I'll wear it then, but did not wear it this past Monday. But I will update as we continue. Should have several more of these events to go. So I'll update, let people know. Hopefully there will be no issues. It'll be great. We'll just get lots of opportunities to teach other black people, have fun. At this point, the greatest concern might be whether or not the Seattle weather cooperates. Thankfully, it was sunny on Monday. If we had done it on Tuesday or Wednesday, I think even maybe yesterday, we may have needed a rain date. With that, other folks who dialed in, if you have questions, comments to share, lines should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, Draftomania.
Can I be heard? Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, yeah. Greetings, Gus, and callers and listeners. Gus, I'm not sure if you're aware. You did read that email in regards to the man who was being mistreated by I guess he was saying something about the Egyptian workers and things like that. You read that a couple of weeks ago. Are you aware of that?
It sounded familiar, but I got confused because it was in my unread folder. Like, when you have the messages right. Are highlighted when you haven't read them before. So I think I probably read it. And then for some reason, or maybe accidentally, I just clicked unread. So it looked like this was one that I had not shared already.
Yeah. I just wanted to let you know that you did read that a couple of weeks ago about how he was being mistreated on a job and, you know, just attack the behavior of his coworkers and how he's just been phenomenal with his, you know, disposition and not reacting. Yeah, I just wanted to let you know that. But I had some workplace racism that I wanted to share. Well, it's not really racism, but it's just some victims who are confused and basically, you know, take on the behavior of, you know, their oppressor. So my situation is when I've been on at work, I have been talking about, you know, this one particular coworker, but there's, you know, there's been a couple of coworkers with their shenanigans on this job. And I remember that I think it was Monday when I came in. As soon as I got in, this coworker basically attacked me. And this is not the first time. It's like, basically, whatever I do, he has, you know, an issue with it, and he is a bully. This is the same one I had talked about the gossiping, you know, to me all the time, and you guys gave me suggestions about what I should do in regards to that situation. So the gossiping thing cut down, but now, you know, it's like this bullying deal that he does with me. Like, we have to, when, you know, whenever we get finished a task or we're doing a task, we have this thing, a text. It's called GroupMe, and you have to text what it is that you have completed, just to let the supervisor and everybody else know that you have been working and that you are completing tasks. So, you know, I put down what it was that I did. And you know, this is on a day, I work on a weekend, so nobody else is there. And I basically just do what I'm told to do. And when he came in, he said, oh, yeah, well, you didn't have to do that because I already did that. And you almost got yourself, I think, I'm not aware of how he said it. He said, you almost got yourself in trouble or something like that. And I said, well, you know, I was told to do this, that, and the other. And I told him that I've talked about a situation that happened the week before when it wasn't looked at and how things was left out of place and I had to clean it up or what have you. So he was like, well, you know, well, yeah, well, okay. Well, I'm going to straighten it out, what have you. So the week before that, you know, I advised in a group that the key was missing, and, you know, I was trying to find out where to locate the key. He texts me and says, oh, you ain't have to do that. I have the key. All you had to do was call me. So if I'm not at work, common sense would tell you I'm not aware of what's going on when I'm not at work. And so what I did, as opposed to going off on him, but it was somewhat like, you know, standing up for myself, but, you know, letting him know that, you know, like, really, you shouldn't come at me like that. I texted him back and I said, well, I wasn't aware who had the key, and I thought such and such and such and such had the key. And I'm just, you know, I was trying to find out who had the key. And I wasn't aware that you had the key, or else I would have called you. Thank you. You know, that was different from what I really wanted to say. But that's the way I said it. I kept it in a professional manner. So what I did on that day when he came to me, because like I said, it's becoming a pattern of him constantly, you know, being rude and basically, like I said, being a bully. So I went to my supervisor and I said, listen, he's coming to me telling me what I shouldn't be doing. I said, well, and I'm letting you know because you told me to do A, B, and C. So the supervisor, who is also a part of the problem, had some of the behaviors also. Like I said, you know, all victims for whatever, you know. So he, as he said, well, okay, I'm going to put it in group that he shouldn't be, you know, telling people what to do, whatever, whatever. So as I'm telling him what the issue is, the big boss over all of us, and even him, his boss, calls the guy that I was complaining about. And, tells him to go to the office. So he asked me, well, did I talk to her? And I said, no. So I was basically trying to tell him, like, you know, the more professional manner of going about the situation wouldn't be to, you know, do it in a group, maybe to pull him to the side and talk to him, because it would just be causing more problems, because I had just got finished having a conversation with him. So it was going to be, made aware that it was me that came back to him and told him, even though he would know anyway. I just think that based on what I've seen, by him putting things in group like that, it's been causing more chaos with coworkers. It's been a lot of chaos. So he did say that he went to him and he talked to him. So then going forward, yesterday, when I came in, because, you know, basically, I guess all what they do, they collude and they talk, you know, everybody talks. So what they've been doing is, like, I guess it's been some unjust networking. And I noticed that my emotions were being surveilled. So when I came in yesterday, you know, I said hi or whatever. And one of the coworkers, he says to me, now they're all friends and they, you know, talk. So I guess if when they'll know what to come to me and try to get me upset or what have you, you know. So he says to me, he says, you're kind of blasé today. And I said, you know, I'm all right. And I said, every day is different. You know, that's how I kept it. So, and then he says something to the supervisor. So I was like, wow. I said, you know, I see that, you know, with the civilians thing, it's like, you know, they're surveilling your emotions to see how you're doing that day so they can see what they can do to possibly, you know, harass you or cause you some type of emotional distress. And I noticed it and I took note of that. And then listening to the conversation about Mr. Gavin DeBecker, how that all came together was when you were talking about how people being nice to you is not, you need to be leery of that. And I'm going to be honest, because of my childhood issues and growing up and not, you know, knowing what they were and never having any resolution on that, I didn't know how to distinguish that, but I'm, you know, dealing with that type of stuff now. So now I'm able to see it. I would fall victim to when people are being nice and not being able to discern them being nice to me and them having a motive. So it was mighty funny that you discussed that yesterday, because that's exactly what happened yesterday. So after they surveilled my feelings and saw how I was doing, then right after that, the supervisor was like, oh, I'm not sure if I spoke to you. And then now everybody's being extra nice to me. So it just put up a red flag, and the show was a confirmation to let me know that I was on the right track. And that's my workplace issues for this week. And thanks for listening.
Much obliged, Draftomania. Emotionally surveilling you. That is, I'm not sure if I've heard it articulated in that manner before, but I do think that's something that people should be mindful about, just coming to and do all this inquiring about how you are, how are you feeling, especially if there's been some sort of conflict or you've reported being abused, mistreated by another coworker, and then they want to come up and ask you all these questions and what have you, and all of that, be very, very suspicious of that. Now that I'm even going back in my mind, other non-white people that have listened to the program, they have reported different situations where same type of thing, a white employee practiced racism against them. And then after they reported it, as they should, then it becomes, oh, my goodness, how are you doing? You look great today. Can I get you, like, all of this phoniness after they terrorized you and what have you? So, yeah, be especially mindful of that in the workplace, the phony niceness where they're just probably trying to spy and get additional information. You can be courteous, but you still don't need to, you know, feel like you need to give them a whole lot of extra responses, engage in a lot of frivolous activity. I would try to have the same or a similar response to all of those questions when they ask, you know, how you're doing, how you're feeling. That way it's never a dramatic shift. I would not be someone, if I say whatever I say I'm doing, that's what it's going to be every day. That way you can do the Mr. Fuller. I'm still learning. Whatever your response is going to be, that's just what it'll be every day. So you never say anything different. It just sounds like, hey, I'm just here doing my job, hoping to be productive, make a few extra nickels if I can. Let's see. As for the attack portion, I think that is important to address as well. When you talked about this guy was coming in, like as soon as you walked in, to be telling you what you should and should not be doing. I think we had a caller last week. Excuse me. We had a caller last week who talked about reporting when a white person was talking to them in an unprofessional manner. Just reporting that as such, as you did. And again, it's not a complaint. It's not a gripe. It's not a grievance. This is unprofessional, unacceptable conduct. I also agree as well in doing it in that group manner. Seems like it may have been done deliberately to cause additional chaos, as you said, to make it really awkward. At least in my experience, I think white people know how to address these problems so that they don't cause more problems. As you said, they can get this person via phone. They can pull this person aside and just have, you know, a 5-minute conversation about proper conduct in the office place. No big deal not to, you know, make it this big thing. And now it just continues over. They, you know, in my view, any time where things like this are not done in what I would say is the proper manner to solve a problem, I generally would have additional question marks like, wow, OK, they want to just be tacky about this, too. I would just be mindful.
They're non-white. They're not white people. They're non-white. Yeah, they're victims. But, you know, victims, they're victims that take on the behaviors of their oppressor. But, you know, then by no fault or for whatever, mistreatment is mistreatment.
Mistreatment is mistreatment. I love it. Something to remember for the workplace. I think we have had some people before who've asked, well, if it is non-white people who are doing it and not white people, what, you know, strategy or how do you deal with that? Mistreatment is mistreatment. Things should be done in the correct manner, regardless. And, you know, that's the position that I take, even if it is non-white people, when incorrect things are happening. Still being in a system of racism, white supremacy, who is ultimately blamed even for that, though? Let's see. Number again is 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. If you have any thoughts, suggestions on what's been shared thus far, or if you have your own situation to discuss, proceed.
Can I contribute to the last report?
Oh, yeah. We always take suggestions. That was Draftomania. If you have any suggestions for her, I'm sure she would appreciate.
Yes. Yes. Yes, ma'am. You stated that I think you stated that it wasn't racism. But I would, well, I'll just explain it like this, and you probably would understand it as racism. You don't say it's quitting time. I say it's quitting time. Two non-white black people in the famous movie that Mr. Fuller talks about all the time, arguing over mimicking the slave master. This is a common practice on jobs with non-white people. It's a common practice that takes place. It could be a situation where everybody on the job is black and the owner is a white person, and the only time they show up is maybe once a month. And you would definitely see that particular practice on that job. What I have done as a remedy, I speak right to the subject. I speak right to the subject of what that person is doing. And in my case, I wouldn't necessarily advise it for everybody. But in my case, I spoke directly to the subject in the way I'm speaking about it now, as far as they're concerned. And apparently, in my case, the person got embarrassed by that activity that he was doing at the time. But it is a common practice that takes place on a job with black people, especially on a job where a lot of the employees are non-white black people, that you are under the global system of racism, white supremacy, and our collective condition, you are bound to run into several non-white black people with that type of behavior and attitude.
Thank you so much, and you are on point with that analogy.
Only because, not because I'm smart, because I've actually seen it on a continuous basis. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Much obliged, retired firefighter. Context of white supremacy. Being prepared for that, I think, in the workplace, because we've had so many non-white people who have expressed frustration when they encounter these victims of white supremacy who are functioning in a manner or doing the bidding of racists just carrying out anti-black functions, mistreating other non-white people in the workplace can be a very frustrating thing. I think being prepared for that can also help you deal with that, maintain maybe a little bit less stress in trying to deal with that, just knowing this is to be expected as well. Let's see, I'm trying to get in some of the additional emails as well. This is a non-white female listener. She writes in, my white male coworker, who is severely baby to the point where he doesn't need to ask for help. Other white coworkers are constantly offering it to him, got promoted to my department. What he's doing disturbs and disgusts me, as that's what racists do. He is on a mission. I'm unsure if this would count as a metaphor, but this is the only way to describe it. He is on a mission to catch a nigger. What I mean by that, he will receive a claim, go home with the client's information, and do thorough searches on what he can find. He not only that, but he will call them daily just to pick a fight with them over the phone, all so he could get a quick laugh. These are all black people he does this to, and he refers to them as criminals. Every morning, his favorite things to talk about are the information he found in so-and-so client. It annoys me and slightly makes me feel bad, as I am scared that white people do this to me. If when I call different places to make claims, whatever type of claim it may be. Well, pause right there. I was reading this and I was trying to grasp, like, oh, okay, so this white guy is like, it, unless I'm misinterpreting what she wrote. So he's like going home, like after work hours, and taking these clients' information. And apparently, like, doing searches online or what have you to see if he can find information, maybe that they're being fraudulent or, you know, whatever. He's just digging through personal information. And then he comes back the next day and shares whatever info he found. And then he calls black people to to squabble with them on the phone, I guess, about their claim or whatever it is. Like, wow. Again, I would encourage folks to be observant in your workplace. This is not a report about her being directly mistreated. She didn't say, at least what I've read in the first paragraph, she didn't say anything about this white coworker mistreating her directly. And I've said that'll probably be the case a lot in your workplace, where it might not even necessarily be that you are being directly harmed, but just being observant, you understand a little bit better about what racism is, how it works. You see how racism, white supremacy is still being practiced right around you, maybe in the desk at the desk right next to you. Amazing. But I mean, this is for insurance claims. And it sounds like, I mean, does this sound serious? They're talking about the storms, major storms that are threatening Louisiana. I think we're 14 years out from Hurricane Katrina. This is serious. People calling in with insurance claims and you're practicing racism, going home on your free time. You don't even get paid for this. Or I'm going to go home and be a sleuth in my own time, see if I can find some of these niggers that are trying to be fraudulent. And or says so I can call in for laughs. That was so important, just for laughs. On company time, presumably. I'm wasting time just for giggles to call and pick with black people. Continuing. This is off code, but I give my white female coworker a ride sometimes because I learn a lot about how the white people in the office operate. I actually even want to pause right there. One sentence in. It's not off code. That's your code. United Independent. Your counter-racist code. I think you just said you take opportunities to learn about white people. That is important. I try to do the same. So, yeah, if that is a part of your counter-racist code, that you have a white woman, suspected racist, you give her a ride. If you worked out a code about how you can be safe in your vehicle, wherever you're, you know, taking her to, and there's something that you're getting out of this. I'm learning about racism. I'm studying this white woman while I'm dropping her off. Hey, that is your counter-racist code. So you are not off code, ma'am. Continuing, generally the whole car ride is her talking about how other white employees like trash. Oh, she talks about them like trash, like they are worthless. So I suspect she does this when she's around a group of white people. But the topic of conversation would be a black person. I bet that completely. We technically live in the same town, but I live on the black end, she on the white end, where no black people are even allowed to live. In order for her to get home, she has to drive through my area, which is a short drive. It's about 1 minute before she is in her section. This has more to do with sundown towns, as you were reading, but I noticed she always asked me to drop her off in the middle of a traffic right before we make it to my area. I'm talking about in the middle of three lanes. She'd rather that versus me dropping her off at the gas station on her section of town, which is closer. I realized when she drives herself home, she avoids going through my area completely, which would be a much quicker way for her to get home. Hence the reason it takes her 45 minutes to get to work and me 20. She's late to work every day, but nothing happens. She's about 20 years older than me and knows about my area's secrets and why the line between the black area and white area is prominent. White people are not ignorant about white supremacy racism. One day I was driving her and she let it slip that she invites other white employees to her section of town. But I can only imagine what they talk about while avoiding driving through the black area. I never told her my address, but she knows where I live. Of course she does. My last part is, I wrote about this before, how all the white employees get congratulations on their anniversaries while the few black ones get nothing. A white coworker of mine told me that they give you a gift like a plaque and raise when you make it to your anniversary. I had no clue about those two things until she told me. I simply thought they sent out a broadcast email and that was it. At this point, I would just urge black people to protect their information as much as they can and to ask a lot of questions. I feel like I've heard that before. I can't say enough. The Dr. Kamal Kamban, KamalKamban.org. He's been a guest on the program many, many times. He said, they call us disadvantaged in the system of white supremacy. We are at a disadvantage because we are missing critical information, and critical information at the crucial moment. This white woman, she said it repeatedly, suspected racist. This white woman knows secrets. This white woman knows about the black side of town. Of course she does. This white woman knows about how the lines and all of the zones were drawn in her town. She's not ignorant about racism, white supremacy, and white people collectively. They have more information. She said that maybe this white woman let it slip. Maybe she didn't. Maybe that was purposeful, just, you know, to see. But these white people, the white employees, they know about the plaques. They know it's not just a congratulation. You get a plaque. Maybe you get, you know, a gift card. Maybe they give you a $200 Amazon gift card for, you know, Prime Day coming up or what have you. Who knows? That's why I said it's so important. Try to ask questions. You want to get as much information, learn as much as you can. Be super curious in your workplace. Learn as much as you can about lots and lots of things. If you can become pals, and I mean that in a workplace sense, not in a you go out and do lunch or anything else, but I mean if you all are courteous in the workplace and with someone who has worked there for a long time, if you can find someone, the person who has worked there the longest, and see if you can chat with them, hang out with them a little bit on a regular basis and just ask questions about things that they've seen and what they know about how things work in the environment, you would be surprised some of the things that you don't know, and find out maybe that is pertinent information, really helpful information that you had no idea about. That is so common in the system of white supremacy, and that is not by accident. That is a major component of how white supremacy racism works. That's what it means to be a nigger. We have information that you don't. That's not fragility. That's white power. Context of white supremacy. Much obliged for the caller who wrote in. I won't say amazing, but just that's folks in the insurance business. We go home on our free time and investigate, surveil black people, see if they're up to no good. Number again, 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61. If you would like to participate. And again, if folks have any suggestions, best way to share counter-racist tips, possible techniques with other black coworkers without causing additional problems. And I also will ask, I think Red Nevada, she mentioned during the book club yesterday, that was mentioned already as well. She mentioned that a white man on the job made some sort of crude comment about her wardrobe. Just would put that out there. If folks have a code around what to do if comments are made about your clothing. I didn't catch all of the details to get exactly what he said. I know she said that she would not wear that outfit again, but that is definitely one I'll ask about. If folks have code in place, any sort of comments, tacky comments, anything that is beyond a, oh, you look nice, and then going on about anything that seems like it could be incorrect, tacky, act of racism. People have a code about how they respond when comments are made about your wardrobe, clothing. You can share that as well. *61 if we have folks we've missed completely. Folks are getting their thoughts together. We'll read one of our other letters from folks who wrote in for the program. Again, untiljustice@gmail.com. Untiljustice@gmail.com. Kizzy's cousin also wrote in. Let's see. All right. This week and for the foreseeable future, I have been concentrating on my emotions before, during, and after work. Specifically, paying attention to how I feel at different times throughout the day and the effect on how I feel about myself and behave. This is with a view to regulating my emotions and its negative effect on my health. You mentioned the many acts of terror we are subjected to, whether they are slights or overtly hostile acts. While I'm much better at how I operate in the workplace, I do not underestimate the hidden affects of this mistreatment. Striving to do better and live healthier. We often discuss being under surveillance. Echo. I also practice observing race soldiers in the workplace and recommend this to other non-white people. Whether suspect or confirmed, each race soldier has their individual method of operating in addition to the ability to Voltron, working with other whites, racists. It's valuable to getting to know who you work with and how they operate, even the seemingly quiet ones. Whilst there have been many racist attacks this week, I've decided to write about an incident from a previous plantation. I was a lot younger and decided to undertake training to improve how I did my job and support my future career advancement. It was not a requirement for my employer, but I did discuss it with my managers and others. My mistake in the workplace. I was working part-time, so I think I probably needed to adjust my work days to accommodate the course, but I don't recall this being a problem. It was a 2-year program, and the first year went well. I remember race soldiers asking me how the course was going from time to time. At the time, I took this as nothing more than genuine interest. I was later surprised to find that a few of these people then signed up to do the same course, particularly as some were very senior managers in the organization who I expected to already have the qualification or something similar. It didn't bother me, I just found it odd. I was too confused to see the racism. I was also going into my second year, so it would not affect me as we would be in different sessions. However, I was approached by a race soldier male who worked in a different department. He had always had a pleasant manner, very soft-spoken and nice, which I guess made his racist act even more shocking. He asked me if I wanted to work more hours. My daughter was very young at the time, so I had lots of bills, including child care. They make that expensive. So it was very tempting. The only problem was he wanted me to work on the day I attended college. I didn't give him an immediate answer, but told him I would give it some thought and get back to him. For some reason, I discussed the matter with my manager, a suspected racist female. I guess his act of racism was too much for her to stomach on this occasion, because she came to me at a later date and informed me the reason he offered the additional hours to me was so that he could do the very same course I was doing. He knew full well it would require me to drop out. Needless to say, I did not take up his offer and finished my program. Deceptive devil, beware of Trojan horses. Wow. And again, this is why we have workplace racism. I don't think if you're not talking to other black people about things that are happening to them in the workplace, I think it can be easy to minimize the deception and just the flat out racism in the workplace. I think if you're just a lot of time, if you're in a vacuum, because I've heard from so many victims over the years, if you don't have access to other black people where you can talk about your experience, you can hear about their experience in the workplace. A lot of times these things happen to us. We're humiliated. We're stressed. I can't emphasize that enough. I think Kizzy's cousin, she started the correspondence saying she'd been monitoring her emotional responses and how, you know, these acts of terrorism, how they impact us, even when it's a quote unquote small slight. What type of impact does that have on me? How does that impact my confidence, even how I feel, how much energy I have moving through the day? That's hugely important. It can be easy to minimize that and or to even say, hey, must be something about me. Maybe I'm defective. I'm messing up. I was late. I didn't do this. That can happens to so many black people where they internalize these acts of terrorism as though it's something defective about them that they just don't measure up, as opposed to, oh, this is just, what is it? Dogs bark, birds chirp, white people practice racism, white supremacy. And I mean, that's not just calling you a nigger, right? If you got someone classified as white and they say, hey, Look here. You are doing a bang-up job. You want some more hours? We are so impressed with what you're doing here on the job. Oh, you do? Great. Well, it's going to be on Thursday. What? What's that? Oh, my goodness. You mean that's the day that you have your... Oh, my goodness. Well, if you want the hours, we'll work it out. They're not coming to you because they're impressed. They're coming to you because I want your spot in the program. Hopefully you'll drop out and I'll get your spot and we'll get promoted and you'll just be here slaving away. And then you opt to take the hours. It wouldn't surprise me. You take the hours and then they come back as soon as you drop the program and they've caused you some stress. Oh, we got to take those hours back. Sorry, we had a shift in the company budget. Oh, we'll make it up to you. I promise. We got you next quarter. Don't even worry about it. I just think for a lot of us, because we don't think like that, it's difficult for us to comprehend. It's difficult for us to accept, because I think most victims of white supremacy, that's just, it's not in our brain computer to think with that level of treachery. Caller in Florida, we talked about the white woman who deliberately wore the same outfit to the courthouse to work, hoping that someone would make a comment about her so that she could write them up. I just don't think that most non-white people go to work thinking like that. Just, I'm hoping I get my quarters. I hope I get my lunch break. I hope I can get home safely again. Nobody calls me a nigger. That's what they're thinking. That's what we're thinking on the job. I know that's what I was thinking. I was not coming in with all these type of plots and schemes. I'm going to get this person. I'm going to set them up. System of racism, white supremacy. Wow. And I would even be suspicious of the white woman who ratted this guy out, who told her, yeah, this is the only reason. I would be suspicious of her, too, because it might just be that they had a squabble that week. He said, I'm going to foil his plan. I don't like that nigger either, but he got on my nerves this week. I'm going to rat out his plan and keep it moving. The number again, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61. If you would like to participate, and again, especially if we have anybody, you have any workplace experience where a snake, squirrel, beaver, any other wild critter has been stuffed in your vehicle or your workstation, you are required to dial in and share about that experience, because I suspect that is not the first time that has happened to a victim of racism in a workplace setting. Other folks that we missed totally, if you have comments to share, proceed.
Gosh, may I be heard?
Yes, sir. Your volume is a little low.
Okay, so it should be up there. Okay, Gus, I'd like to call to tell you thanks, man. I've been drinking a whole bunch of water. I lost a lot of weight, and I've been eating a lot of fresh fruits and vegetables. And thank you so much, man. I've been drinking a lot of water. But I just want to share something with you. One of my coworkers saw me drinking a whole bunch of water. So he asked me, drinking all this water. I said, well, drinking water is a little bit of your lifestyle, you know. So he made a smart comment saying, well, I'm going to have to tell him to drug test you because that doesn't drink a lot of water. So I said, you could tell him whatever you want. This my prerogative to drink a lot of water and to eat healthier, you know. So, yeah, I mean, you can't even drink water on the job, you know. They're trying to drug test you. So, but thanks again for everything, and you really made a big difference here. So, I've been keeping in accordance with your advice and eating better. So, the only thing left is yoga, though. So, I will try it. But thanks a lot, Beth.
Much obliged, sir. I'm so glad. That is music to my ears. I'm so glad to hear that. Thank you for encouraging other folks as well. Drink more water. Drink more water. There should be a report on the compensatory call-in this weekend. They just did a study and found that sugary drinks, non-water beverages, can severely increase your risk for cancer and other diseases. Drink more water. And it is the summer. So, I mean, hey, at least if you're not in Seattle, it's summertime. So definitely drink more water. And again, the tackiness of that, to be in the workplace drinking water. He didn't say he was stealing paper clips, trying to defraud the company. He didn't say that he was slacking and taking a 2-hour lunch break. I'm here. I'm doing my work. It's summertime and I'm drinking water. What? What's going on? You drinking all that water for? Crackhead. I'm gonna get him drug tested. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Get your urine checked. What in the world? I would put that in my workplace journal as well, because that's so tacky. And that's not something that you have to report. You don't have to tell anybody. But I mean, what in the world? If it had been a white person and they just had their Evian, I'm drinking my water. Now, all of a sudden, am I a heroin addict? I'm just trying to flush my system out. That's what it is. It can't just be that it's summertime. It can't just be that I want to be healthy. I can't just say, oh, I'm just looking out for my health. You're healthy, nigga, huh? I would be remiss if I didn't recall, again, caller at the courthouse in Florida was doing the same thing, drinking his water on the job. What did that? He took his water out and put it on the floor. That's what I mean. Like, wow, this is the system of racism, white supremacy. Mr. Fuller said it does not get any better than tacky. And I mean, I don't even know what to say about that. Water, like, you in prison, you at least get water, right? Sometimes. Like, whoo. Expect nothing less or expect nothing more than racism, white supremacy, even with your beverages in the workplace. And again, that is why I encourage folks for years, be mindful, you know, personal items in the workplace, your food. I know from personal experience and other people have talked about having food in the refrigerator and things at work where that becomes a problem and white people are manipulating that or stealing it outright sometimes. Be very mindful of all of your personal products at work. Even your water bottle, that sort of thing would not surprise me once you have whites making comments like that. And what's up with you drinking all this water? If you have a water bottle, if they come to try and sneak it away or do something to it, that's the system that we are in. Context of white supremacy. Number again, 605-313-5164. Decode 564-943 pound. The yoga helps as well. Coming to Florida, end of the year. More details to come. Very excited about being in Florida for the end of the year. Hopefully it'll be warm weather. Hopefully we'll get our summer in December, since I have missed it being here in Seattle this July. Other folks who dialed in, if you have comments, questions you would like to share, proceed. While folks are getting their thoughts together, I know we've had lots of dialogue about other non-white people, or at least not today, but over the years in the archives, we've had lots of folks who have shared about their frustrations with other non-white people in the workplace when they're not doing correct things. Draftomania, she wasn't, you know, frustrated with her coworkers today, but certainly talking about how they were causing problems, not functioning in a constructive manner in the workplace. I can, again, only encourage that. Unfortunately, is very common in the system of racism, white supremacy. I think it's so important what retired firefighter said about recognizing who is most to blame when these type of problems occur in the workplace. And it is imperative that you have a counter-racist code for how you want to deal with that, minimizing conflicts with other non-white people in the workplace. That is definitely one that you do not want to get out of control, where other white people have to step in to intervene to solve that problem, and or to just have that something that continues and festers for weeks, months, where you're having conflict with another non-white person in the workplace. Try to avoid that at all costs by already having a code in place for that, because it is so widespread. Let's see. Other folks who are with us, if you have suggestions on what's been shared thus far, your own situations. Lines should be open. Proceed.
May I be heard?
Greetings, caller in Florida.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. My first one is to go on the water subject. That reminds me, I have heard that kind of the drug test, like racist comment. It's a non-white, non-black sheriff bailiff, you know, a tan-skinned non-white person. I reported this maybe a year or two ago that the white woman was calling him burrito. And he drunk like 64 ounces of water. He had like this water container. So we would make sure we would check on each other about, you know, how much we're drinking. Okay. So it was a white customer one time. He was like, man, why are you drinking all of that water? You trying to pass a drug test or something? And, you know, that reminded me of that. And if it's not that, then they'll say, you know, a white person, sometimes they'll say, well, hey, you're going to get water intoxication or something like that. I said, no, I space it out through the day. Like, what are you talking about? Like, that's never happened or whatever. And then it was a white woman. I don't know if I shared this one, but, she made a comment about, oh, I got a lot of water going out or whatever. And I said, does anybody have any mail going out? She said, I had a lot of water going out. So, you know, like they'll sometimes make definitely destructive type of comments, even when trying to be constructive. But for the most part, definitely very constructive to mention water in the workplace. My next one is, Gus, I had sent you a image of a magazine cover. It's called The Crisis Magazine. And the reason that I sent it to you is that I was in the top white person's office. I was getting a signature from him, and he had this image. I could see the image on the desk. It was the face of a black male with a transparent picture of a noose, like on the front of it. So I was like, man, what in the world? You know, like, what is that doing on his desk? But definitely never be surprised or shocked by anything. It just definitely caught my attention. So I could see that it looked like the word crisis or some S-I-S-I-S-I-S. So I went and Googled it, and I found the cover. And definitely it looks like it's something that mentions racism a lot. I had never heard of the magazine before. So I shared it with a black female who I have discussions with. And she was like, wait a minute, what did you say? She said, let me process that. She said she had to process it. So I don't know, maybe he's trying to apparently study, because as you say, whites are not ignorant. So, you know, it was just laying there like almost folded, but it was still visible. So I don't know if he's planning to use that to talk about something relating to racism. And I'll definitely be staying tuned on that. My next one is, is it okay that I could pass it on and I could finish the rest of what I had?
Oh, for sure. It'll come back to you. Let's see. The I'd never heard of water intoxication before. So I was trying to check to see what that was and even how common it is. It says that it's rare. I didn't know that. That was one of the first words that I found. And it says that this rare condition is drinking too much water too fast. So this seems like a condition that would be more if you had like a gallon or maybe 2 or 3 gallons and you're just guzzling, you know, one after the other. Boom, 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 boom. That seems more like when this would be a problem, not if, you know, you have a normal 8 ounce, 16 ounces of water and you drink that in the hour and then you go back and fill that back up. And, you know, that seems that's not going to happen at all. Because I was wondering, like, wow, I've never even heard of that. Water intoxication. What is that? Alcohol poisoning? Oh, yeah, I'm very familiar with what that is. But water intoxication? Okay. The magazine, again, white people are not ignorant about racism. That is interesting that I don't know what it was about. I have to check the your email, and then maybe I can go and find this magazine or what have you and see what this report was about. But white people are not ignorant about racism. It's being discussed all the time, directly, indirectly. And if you are informed about racism, you see directly, indirectly how it all ties back to racism, white supremacy anyway. And as I said, white people can't be ignorant. So they are constantly seeing how this relates to their global empire. And certainly you got an article like that. Absolutely. And again, at the courthouse, like, huh, that is interesting literature. Is that something that's going in the newsletter? Is that something that's going to be brought up in the next staff meeting? Like, what is this? You know, what is this here about? I'm going to have to check that email so I can find out for myself, see what this is about. And then, yeah, is this going to be brought up in the workplace? And how so? Is this going to be in our next staff meeting? Like, is this shared literature? Do we all need to check this out and be prepared to have a, you know, discussion? What are our thoughts on this? Like, yeah. Anywho, other folks who dialed in, if you have thoughts, questions, suggestions on anything that has been shared thus far. So I guess if we have any other water stories, or as I said, anyone, a snake has been left in your vehicle, stuffed in your file cabinet in the workplace, you are required to dial in to share about that experience. And or if we have other folks who dialed in, if you have thoughts, questions to share, line should be open. Proceed. Folks are spectating. I assume that they have not had a snake left in their vehicle. Glad to hear it. If this means that you have not had massive difficulties in your work environment, or at least are not experiencing them now, that is spectacular. Invest if you think the program is constructive and you are getting all of your promotions and raises without interference, problem. Fantastic. Visit the website racism-notes.blogspot.com. racism-notes.blogspot.com. You'll see the PayPal button top right corner, wish list link there as well. Much obliged to all the folks who have supported, but hopefully the folks who are spectating things are going extremely well for you in the workplace. You're having the best year of your career thus far, and things look like they're only going to get better. Whoopee. And you should still be taking notes, as I've said consistently, even if you directly are not being victimized. White supremacy racism is being practiced around you, I suspect. So I would just be mindful of things that are happening in the workplace. As it relates to wardrobe, as I said, that came up yesterday. We weren't even talking about workplace racism, and that got broached. Any comments that are made about clothing in the workplace, I would take that pretty seriously, especially if it's anything, if you're a female and it's a male making that sort of comment, or vice versa, even if, you know, whatever, same sex. I would take that very seriously, especially in this era. I mean, for R. Kelly to be federally indicted today, arrested, we're in the Me Too era. Mr. Cosby's in greater confinement. There should be zero tolerance for any sort of remarks, crude statements, poor attempts at humor, about something that you're wearing. And I mean, this is, like I said, I think read on the program yesterday, she said that she, you know, decided she wasn't going to wear that outfit anymore. I've said for a long time, as it relates to what you wear on the job, I am all about being a prude in the workplace. I am not wearing anything to look cool, to look cute. I'm not trying to attract any attention. As we talked about today, it generally just becomes very tacky. I would not want to be wearing things for folks to say, oh my gosh, that is such a beautiful, you know, sweater, such a nice blouse or jewelry, any of that. No, I am just here to work. Like, all of my cool attire would be reserved for when I am away from the workplace. And that's why, just because I've seen it, I think even Red and Devon, I think for a couple years back, she had talked about how a supervisor was commenting about her lip gloss. And I'm certainly not, you know, saying that you don't, you know, wear makeup in the workplace, do what you do. I'm just saying it would be, everything would be about turning it down for the workplace. I'm amongst people that are not friends. I'm going to dress as such. That's why I'd even said before about wearing the same thing on a daily basis, having, you know, five of the same outfit and just boom, 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 boom. That way it does what I just all it looks like I have a set uniform that I just wear every day. And that's about the way that I would want it to be. That's about the feel that I would want it to have. That way there is never anything to say about my clothing, wardrobe. Oh, you got to do this. Or you got to. Nope. All of my new nice, cool clothing, you will never see them. I'm just wearing what I wear for work. Drab purposely. If folks have any thoughts on that, you feel free. Other folks with comments, questions, suggestions.
Gus, can I be heard?
Yes, sir. Caller in Florida.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. The rest of the reports starts with there was a black male that came in. He was from another county. And he was doing some research on some court cases that he had in his name, civil cases. And he got into discussing another county. I believe it was Putnam, I believe. And he was saying he used the term redneck. He said, you know, they're real redneck over there, man. And he started mentioning about a monument of a tree. He said that they used to hang black people. I think it's called the Maltby Tree or something like that in Palatka, Florida. So he said that it's like I guess it's almost like a park, and it's in front of the courthouse in that county. So he said that he started talking about that, and then he mentioned about how black people's property was taken away, and like an aspect of it would be where they would overcharge black homeowners, like for things like cutting the lawn, landscaping, and things like that. And they would collaborate with the realtors to get black people's homes foreclosed on. And I'm trying to paraphrase it as best as I could, because it kind of went by so fast. I was helping them as a customer. So I asked him, I was like, so basically it was like a system, huh? And he says, yes, sir. So, you know, that was a bit of history that he gave me. And I had two other incidents where I exercised the planned ignoring or just silence, and it just worked flawlessly, in my opinion. The first one was today, where we had a luncheon, and the suspected race soldier or racist, she made, I guess, eggs and grits or whatever, like breakfast items. So they've been trying to do everything they can to get black people to, I guess, not see them as racist. That's my understanding of it. So I refused. And I've been refusing like every time. So she asks me, she says, oh, did you go and get any breakfast? And so I said, no, like that. And I was at the coffee machine And she was like, fine, I didn't want to feed you anyways. Just go in there and get some of the food. So I didn't say anything, okay? And so she just kind of just walks off, I guess, upset. And then next thing you know, she's trying to be nice, nicer later on, because I just had a work-related question. So I didn't have any kind of emotion or nothing. You know, I was just trying to get an answer for this, like a question that I had about a copy that I was making. So that was an interesting incident right there. And another racist made a comment about I was walking toward the other part of the courthouse, and I guess they had like an influx of people coming in with a bad smell or odor to them. So he said, the guy said he was talking to another white guy, another bailiff security guard. So I can tell he had got really racist and comfortable. So he like, yeah, you know, we had a lot of people that was really funky coming in today. And then Blank's walking by, you know, I might have to go ahead and spray while he walks by. And then so, you know, I just kept walking. And then so like, oh, you know, dang, he didn't hear me. And then the other white guy goes, oh, yeah, he heard you. So I kept walking or whatever. And then so I had a planned codified response. If he had said anything to me, I was going to say, is there a problem? I was going to say that. And just don't say that to me ever again in your career here, like, period. So he next time he seen me, you know, he was just like, you know, hey, how's it going or whatever. All of that hostility went away, but him still being white, I still expect that, okay? And it's a pattern that I noticed where they will so-called speak and be generous to you, and then they'll act like you don't even exist. But I just call that just basically just opposition when they're practicing racism like that. And I've gotten a lot better over the years about how I channel my emotions with the logic. And that's all I have for now. Thanks for allowing me to share.
Much obliged. Wow. Again, white people are not ignorant about racism, white supremacy. I was trying to find the tree that the customer mentioned when he was talking about the system of terrorism that whites had in place to steal property from black Floridians. We talked about that. We had NDB Connolly on the program 2015, all of his brilliant research on black-owned property in Florida and how whites through lots of different deceitful schemes, some of which, like we just heard, they went about stealing black-owned property in Florida. But again, white people are not ignorant about this. Probably, I don't know if he's a Florida native, but it might have been some of his relatives who were engaged in all of this, you know, depending on how long he's been there. But neither here nor there. And again, brilliant illustration just about how much you can learn being at the courthouse to have just some random white person come in with that sort of detail. The comment about the odor, like, wow. And again, it doesn't get any better than tacky for him to say that. And oh, then you come in. I know I'm going to have to spray now. Like, I mean, really, I'm a coworker here. Like, that's how I'm going to be. I've been in the newsletter here. I've been a featured employee here. And that's how, you know, that's the joke of the day for me. Like, come on. Come on. And already thinking about how you would respond. That's another one I think is great black self-respect about, you know, saying, hey, is there a problem? Don't ever say that to me again. In the workplace. I think that's also another illustration to make a comment like that, that it's just so crude. And you know, like he got really comfortable to come up and go into this sort of performance out front to do that And then they come back and it's, hey, fella, how you doing? Good afternoon. Like that. We talked about that in The Gift of Fear yesterday, that niceness, how that is, can just be a total scheme to be nice to someone, get you back up. Oh, yeah, just horsing around, just horsing around, just doing a little prank, and you're all in together. That's, I think, why Dr. Kahneman, where he says, I recommend not saying good morning, good afternoon, good morning. Codification for myself, regardless of even if you are deciding to be nice, I know I'm about 5 seconds away from another one of your crude jokes. Whether I'm supposedly a drug addict because I'm drinking my water, or I'm stinky like the rest of the folk, whatever it is, I'm about 5 seconds away from, you know, being called out in that manner. That's why just being codified and to not be stunned. That's why I say it's so important we can get to that level of codification where none of this is a surprise. We're not ever in a knee-jerk response to any of this. We've already kind of thought that this sort of thing could happen, and or we've observed this sort of thing happen before if it hasn't happened to us directly. So we already got our response. We're going to do our planned ignoring, which I say always works about at least 50% of the time. Planned ignoring will be successful. Don't say anything. Fine. We'll keep going. If I need to say something, I can take time and come back and say something later. I can even come back and say something tomorrow. Much obliged, caller in the courthouse. And I think also being aware when you note if this is a white person suspected racist in your air, in your workstation, your work area, and you know, like, oh, wow, this person has gotten really comfortable in articulating themselves. That's also something to be mindful of. I think at least in a lot of work environments, people are supposed to be professional, right? We'll mute, we'll save the nigger jokes and what have you until we're off. It's quitting time, and then we'll get into all of that. Be mindful when you have got some folks who've gotten comfortable. They probably can do a great job, much better than I, showing you what it means to be classified as white. Decals, other folks, comments, questions, suggestions you would like to offer. The number again, 605-313-5164. The code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Folks are spectating, assume either they are being treated well in the workplace and or they've not had a snake in the vehicle, have not had suggestions on what's been shared thus far. I'll double check to make sure I got all of the emails, didn't miss out on any of those. We'll see. We'll do another 10 minutes and see if folks have any other thoughts, questions, scenarios they would like to address before we wrap things up. If folks are still spectating, we should be here tomorrow for the compensatory call-in, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Tune in. We'll review what happened over the last week. As I said, R. Kelly arrested today. Federal indictment. Thought that was pretty serious. They generally do not lose cases, generally speaking. But we'll review that for tomorrow. Compensatory call-in. And I guess I'll give out information on that tomorrow, because that doesn't have anything else to do with workplace racism. It was a report that came out. We had talked about Dr. King and some of the allegations about it's more of his sexual impropriety and other misdeeds against Dr. King. There was a new report authored by a white person that came out. I'll give more details about that on the compensatory call-in. For workplace racism, again, I'm double checking to make sure I didn't miss any of the emails from folks who wrote in, untiljustice@gmail.com. If you have thoughts, questions, suggestion on what has been shared on the program, I would again, since folks did take the suggestion, drink more water. Drink more water if you're in the workplace. Be mindful about the foods, beverages that you consume. That is a major aspect of ill health
that you have to combat in the workplace. They will have, I think they had Pizza Day this weekend, all other kinds of nonsense. Be prepared for that as well. A major component of the workplace is just you having the energy, the vitality to think and perform well. I think being well rested, being well nourished goes a long way, even in terms of just counter racism and being able to process what racists are doing to us in the workplace and what's the best way to respond. Being, as I said, well nourished, well rested. I don't think having 3-5 donuts when it's donut day, they have that on the plantation too. I don't think having all the donuts, having all of the pizza or any of the other nonsense that they frequently bring in, sugar, caffeine out the ears. I generally don't think any of that is going to be helpful in us being our best, feeling our best. It might, you know, give you a little sugar rush for the moment, or you get your caffeine boost. Those energy drinks, I've said those are horrible. I definitely discourage consumption of those. Drinking more water. I wasn't even promoting it, saying, oh yeah, and you can lose weight. You absolutely can, but drinking more water. It is so helpful. If nothing else, there are so many benefits, but if nothing else, you will have to go to the bathroom to empty your bladder. I have found in work environments, that little break can be so important. That can be an excuse to end a tacky exchange. That can be 5 minutes of think time to recompose. That can be 5 minutes of check-in time to see how am I feeling. How have I been impacted by any of the racist treachery that I have endured on this day? Just having that 5 minutes to go check in, ostensibly you're by yourself. It's not a group activity to go to the restroom, to just do a self check. And then I go back out after my 5 minutes. Just that alone from drinking more water. When you're not drinking all that water, bladder's not full. You might not have to go to the bathroom. Don't get that time to check in. That is also something that I recommend for the workplace. And you can do those breathing exercises while you are alone. Anywho, other folks' comments as I checked. Don't think we got all of the folks who wrote in. Don't think I missed anybody's emails. Any other comments, suggestions from folks who called in? We'll assume folks are satisfied, have got out everything they need to, at least for this week. Drop an email if you have suggestions, problems. I certainly always appreciate updates. I've said this before. We got a few over the last couple of weeks. If you use some of the strategies, let us know how things work. If you come up with your own techniques that you think will work to solve some of your problems in the workplace, let us know. We are still learning and just trying to figure out different things that can be helpful in the workplace. Let us know how the updates go. If you write in to share with some of these different situations, we always appreciate. And that lets us know, hey, if we are giving out suggestions that are not helpful, you process and or use, that helps us refine as well. But please, with the updates, keep them coming. Keep up with the documentation. We did have one person who wrote in via social media, where I shouldn't even be chuckling, making sure that you have your dates, times, all of the pertinent information when you do your documentation to take that seriously. I certainly hope that we have echoed that, suggested that for years, whether you have an actual notebook. I bumped into some people this week, like people that I could actually touch. That's how they did their documenting. They carried around a physical notebook so that they could have all of their ideas, or if things happened, they could immediately transcribe what happened. If you do it on your phone or mobile device, whatever it is, but have a system so that you can be efficient and so that it's organized. I can't say that enough. If you take notes, try to have a system set up so that it's easy for you. Primarily, these notes are going to be for you. Make it something that you will use. Make it so that it's easy and so that you benefit, so that it's not where you've taken the notes about what happened, what was said, or whatever the case, and then you can't find it or it's tough to locate and that sort of thing. make it easy. They have so many gadgets and technology and apps that you can use on your phone or tablet or whatever, all of the above sometimes, to make it easy, seamless. It'll all be dated. You can have your keywords and everything super, super easy. You can print it out, send it to other devices and all of that. Find something like that so that you will be motivated to keep up, be consistent with your journaling in the workplace. Right on. With that, unless folks had anything they needed to get in.
Gus, I have about two or three more. Is it okay that I could share them?
Oh, let's hear it. Caller in Florida.
this one is from the black female that I speak with. She said racism was practiced once again with the cell phone use from her supervisor. She seems to blatantly have her cell phone out on the keyboard. So one of the higher ups comes by and she noticed that they'll practice racism by speaking in a loud voice saying, "Well, everybody have a good evening." Okay, now they'll do this to notify the white person to put her phone away instead of them addressing the white person to put the phone away. So they'll say this, "How's everybody doing?" or "Everybody have a good evening or a good day." And she says she's observed them doing this because they can look through her window and clearly see that she's on the phone. So once again, they're reinforcing racism, white supremacy by doing that. And I thought that was fascinating how they practice racism in that manner. And I heard a conversation occurring in the hallway from the warden. She was speaking to a non-white female. And I heard the non-white female was saying that, "Well, I know she's half black." Okay. And I came to the conclusion that she was telling this white woman this, I guess recruiting, or she was trying to find someone to hire, I guess, because she's the person in charge of doing the interviews. So they've had these three or four positions out and they haven't hired people yet. So I'm thinking that they're trying to hire a certain racial classification of someone who has a white and non-white parent, or a black and a white parent. And my last one is, this is another one that was shared to me from the black female. She said she heard a comment. Someone told her this person who has a white and non-white parent said that she doesn't eat watermelon because of her black side. So I don't know what that meant. So she didn't really have a chance to address and respond to that. But those are the three that I wanted to share. Thank you.
I don't know what that means either. Don't eat watermelon because of my black side. Yeah, I don't know what that means either. That's just curious. I would have maybe asked a question for clarification, but don't have time. Oh, well, I'd maybe put that in my journal really quick if I have time next week to ask for clarification about that one. The discrepancy with reprimanding folks about the phone policy in the workplace, that's the sort of thing. Being mindful of that, that sort of thing happens all the time. That's why Mr. Fuller, when he talks about equal protection under the law, equal enforcement of policy and procedure, that is every day worldwide in terms of whether it's discretion with truancy. Someone came 5 minutes late. Someone came 30 seconds late. The phone, it can be all types of policy and procedure where you'll see the same thing. And that's so subtle because you talked about the phone thing for a while. They'll come in sometimes and, you know, be super hyper. You know, this is ridiculous. And they come out with the metaphors and all that. And then other times that's so subtle to just, "Oh, well, everyone have a good evening." Oh, that's Trump. Yeah, put my phone away. That's so subtle. But I mean, that's huge, because when you come out And you make it that clear where you talked about when it's some of these black people and they come in and make a big fuss about it and all this. That's the sort of thing that could be brought up when it's time for a promotion, where I could see somebody saying, well, I don't know, we've had to talk to you, you know, two or three times about that cell phone. You know, that's not exactly professional. I don't know if we want, I don't know if that's management material, have somebody who's going to be constantly on their cell phone. Seems like you're not really engaged in what we're doing here. As opposed to, we never reprimand you about the phone. We just give some sort of verbal cue and you know, oh yeah, let me get off my phone. Had my 5-minute grace period for my texting or whatever I'm doing on the phone. That sort of thing is huge, and I'm very certain, I am convinced that sort of thing plays out exactly how I just said, where sometimes, especially when they say, because sometimes what they'll say, the excuse, the buckets of words that they give in these decisions, when it's a promotion or management or raise or probationary period being extended, that's the sort of rubbish that they'll use. Oh, well, you came in, you know, 30 seconds late a couple days last week. Or, oh, yeah, you know, we've had to talk to you 3 or 4 times about that cell phone. You know, that's pretty serious. We want people to be professional here and you can't be on your own time. You know, do that at lunch. So I'm going to extend that probationary period another 3 months, see if you can get that wraps, get it under wraps about that cell phone or whatever. And then we'll talk about that probation again in 3 months. They do that sort of thing all the time. And both aspects of it. The not chastising white people when they're violating policy and procedure and not making a big stink about it. That happens all the time in the system of racism, white supremacy. That's another one. I would point that out when next time somebody gets on a rant. Do we raise an equal stink? You can find, you know, your own verbiage. But are the same charges made equally? We have equal enforcement of our policy about the no cell phones in the workplace. Seems like it might be a little inconsistent. You don't have to name anybody. In fact, I encourage not naming or indicting anyone because it's not like you're trying to go in to get a specific person charged. But we do think it would be better, or do we? You could put that in the form of a question, too. Would it be best to have policy and procedure enforced consistently, equally amongst all employees? Would that be best? Oh, okay. Especially in the courthouse. I mean, my goodness. Any other thoughts, questions, suggestions folks wanted to offer? Grant, we will be here tomorrow. Compensatory call-in, dial-in. If you have suggestions, thoughts on things that have transpired over the past week and or counter-racist suggestions, tomorrow evening, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. As I stated, we should have information for the Florida yoga retreat, was mentioned earlier in the broadcast, at the end of December, December 27 to January 1. Should be additional information forthcoming, the location and all of that. If, you know, you are interested, drop an email untiljustice@gmail.com. Untiljustice@gmail.com. And I will be sure to post, send out all of the details as soon as everything is final. If we have folks that are in the Seattle area, if you are interested in coming out to do yoga in the park. Again, this is supposed to be specifically organized around attracting, encouraging black people to come out and get exercise and participate. So if you're in the Seattle area or think you might be visiting sometime over the next month or so, drop an email. You can come hang out, do yoga with us in the park. It's free. I think you would just need to bring yourself. Yes, I'm thinking, make sure, yeah, because there are yoga mats there that are provided for free. So, yeah, you just need to bring yourself if you are interested in doing a little yoga in the park. Hopefully it will be sunny weather. Cross our fingers and see what the weather brings. With that, much obliged to the folks for participating. Hope it was worthy of your Friday evening. Drop an email if you have suggestions, updates, counter-racist incidents regarding workplace racism to share. Sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. certainly with the holidays and all of that that just transpired and just summertime in general, lots of outings, family reunions, the barbecues, beach, just vacationing in general. I am sure there will be lots of shindings, lots of opportunities for an alcoholic beverage or whatever. I would encourage drink more water. Sobriety would be best. I'm pretty sure there are a whole lot of problems that we could easily avoid just by not consuming their poisons and narcotics. Racists have a solid history of exploiting a lot of non-white people who were not thinking at their best because they weren't sober. In addition to not consuming any of the narcotics, poisons, let's be buckled up every time we are in a vehicle, passenger, or driver. Let's do all that we can to minimize contact with race soldiers, badge or no. And stay off of your cell phone. Again, I just had victims of racism report being in the presence of hostile enforcement officials who charged that, oh, you were in the vehicle on the cell phone and, you know, all the rest of it. You don't want to take these chances if you don't have to. In a system of racism, white supremacy, anything that we can do that might increase the likelihood of our safety just a little bit, if that means we get in that vehicle, I'm definitely buckled up. We get in that vehicle, I am not on my cell phone. Just little things. Try as much as we can. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
Man, I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.